Sedrashir, Monday, Tuesday, the 15th of February 2011, Setra Kitisa. And we're dealing with the final psukim in the Sedra, which address the veil that Moshe Rabbeinu put over his face when he came down from Har Sinai with the second set of Luchot and found that his face was shining. So I really want to ask three questions. I mean, we raised a number of questions as we brainstormed just there. Some of them are, if you like, details about the text. I want to ask really three thematic questions to do with this subject, and then I think we'll have as we answer them, then we'll have a better understanding of what's going on. First question is very simply, why was Moshe Rabbeinu's face shining when he came down from Har Sinai? We can ask as a sub question there, sort of question 1B, if you like, what was the nature of this light that was shining? The expression here is ki karan or panav, which we've translated here as the face of his skin sent forth beams, and this is one of the questions discussed by the Mefarshim. This verb of karan would seem to be related in some way to the word keren, which is a horn, which is where the non-Jewish idea of Jews having horns comes from, that Moshe Rabbeinu came down with horns of light coming out of his head. But most of the Mefarshim explain that it's actually just it's a verb which means to send forth light brightly. So first question is, why was his face shining? Second question is, how come Moshe Rabbeinu was unaware of the fact that his face was shining? And the third question is, what was the significance of the masveh, the veil, or as Jacob called it, the mask, that he used to cover his face? When exactly did he use it to cover his face? I picked up on a machloket there between Jacob and Ben. I'm not sure if you two picked up on it, but Jacob suggested that he covered his face when he spoke to Bnei Israel and uncovered it when he spoke to Hashem, and Ben said that he uncovered it also when he spoke to Bnei Israel. So that is actually reflects a okay, so that's a third view. So those views are reflected in the Mefarshim. But what was the purpose of the veil? Why did he need the veil? And when did he use that veil? So those are the questions that I want us to try and address. So our first question was, why did Moshe Rabbeinu's face shine? Let's start with Rashi, and what we'll see is a range of different opinions on this matter. So Rashi actually quotes for us a midrashic explanation. Mehechan zachar Moshe lekarnei hahod. Why did Moshe have these horns? This shining light coming out of his head. Rabotinu amru min ha-ma'ara. It was from when he stood in the cave on Har Sinai, and he wanted to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. And we know that Avraita et Achorai, Moshe Rabbeinu only got to see the glimpse, the back of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenatan HaKadosh Baruch Hu yado al panav. And the Medrash is telling us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed his hand actually on Moshe's face. Shenemar v'sakoti kapi, that I will sort of spread a canopy with my hand. So according to this Medrash, what happened is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu almost touched Moshe Rabbeinu. Perhaps he did touch Moshe Rabbeinu, and as a result, Moshe Rabbeinu started shining. So this is really something very supernatural. I think that's one of the terms that Ben Voss used. It's something very supernatural, and it's perhaps evidence of the experience that Moshe Rabbeinu has just had. It's evidence of the fact that he's now a different person. He's now been in contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and as a result, his skin is shining brightly.
So why didn't happen the first time?
Because he didn't come into physical contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu the first time.
No.
So that, but the question that you're asking is a good question, which is repeated by a number of the mafarshim. They want to know exactly what's the difference between, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu comes out second set of luchot. We presume that the second set of luchot are not as good as the first set of luchot. They weren't what was originally intended, and yet it's this occasion that Moshe Rabbeinu comes back with this badge of honor. So Rashi's addressing that question by saying simply that something physical happened when Moshe Rabbeinu was up for the final 40 days that hadn't happened previously, or this probably actually happened during the middle 40 days when Sukkot Kapi. But in any event, that Moshe Rabbeinu had that close physical encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu,
which itself is a very difficult concept.
Correct. Correct. So whether it means, you know, that it's that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually placed his hand, which of course he doesn't have, on Moshe Rabbeinu's face, or whether it's just a way of describing that Moshe Rabbeinu saw the brightness of the Shekhinah, whatever that means.
That makes the second question much more perplexing then. That why did Moshe not know?
Keep hold of that.
Okay.
I'm not as perplexed as you are on that one, so we'll give that a go in due course.
But it all collapsed into God wanted his face to shine, because if a piece of hot metal touches something, it burns it, as I said. But you can't say the same of God. First of all, because God doesn't have a hand in touching that way, and also because any result of God in his, so to speak, touching, it's just sort of depends on whether God wills it or not. So doesn't it all just turn into the question, or just, what happened was that God at that point wanted Moshe's face to shine?
Well, you're getting into very philosophical realms. One thing, observation I'll make, of course, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu is described as Eishoch La. So if he wanted, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu could have been pulverized or vaporized by the experience. That's clearly not what's happened. And there are, you know, we where else do we have a model of brightness being transferred from one to another? That's not what I'm thinking of. I can think of two examples, and one we've touched on in when we had the shiur on Parashat Bo a few weeks ago, and also on the Shabbat morning shiur a few weeks ago when we dealt with Kiddush Levana, the notion that the moon reflects the light of the sun in the same way that Am Yisrael reflects the light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this could be sort of just a very vivid expression of that. That's number one. Number two, we know that when Moshe Rabbeinu passed on the mantle of leadership to Yehoshua, what was he told? V'natata me'odcha alav. You should put some of your splendor onto Yehoshua. And the way the Chazal describe it is Moshe Rabbeinu was like Pnei Chama, and Yehoshua was like Pnei Alvana. Moshe was like the sun, Yehoshua was like the moon. But in any event, we've got that transfer of brightness. So that could be, you know, a similar thing here, you know, sort of Moshe Rabbeinu bringing with him a badge of authenticity, which we will see that repeated again in the Chizkuni in a slightly different way.
I don't know how relevant it is to anything you're going to say, but I find it very significant and very reassuring that it's unwitting on Moses' part. He doesn't come down thinking, I've got these things shining out at me. I'm a sort of paranoid, anti-Gallican, terrified of sort of priesthoods that set themselves up and have any sort of...
Okay, so you'll be able to sit quite comfortably through this year. As, I'm relieved to say. Okay, so number one is Rashi. Okay, and Rashi's telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu got this this shining, this glowing face from his encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his close encounter, in a way that he hadn't encountered HaKadosh Baruch Hu on previous occasions. I mean, he'd spoken encountered HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a semi-physical sense, you know, the snare. He'd received the first set of luchot. Now, he'd been right up there in the thick of it. Nevertheless, this was a new experience, the Sakotikapi, when he encountered Akash Baruch in that way. Two different interpretations appear in the Chizkuni. And the Chizkuni asks Jacob's question, which is essentially, you know, why didn't he have this encounter, or why didn't he come back with this shining face on the first occasion? So why did he experience this with the second set of luchot and not with the first set of luchot? So the first set of luchot, everybody experienced the giving of those tablets. Biramim, the kolot, the aish, there was thunder, lightning, fire, the lot. Uveilukativ, and with the second set, it says, Gam ishal yirab chohar. Nobody can be in close proximity to the mountain whatsoever. So Me'achar Sharishonot Nitnu Bekolot Uvrakim V'anan V'lapidim, sings the first set of luchot were given in a full pyrotechnic display, V'halalu Nitnu B'chashai, and these were given in secret, Ilulei Karnei Hahod, were it not for these, for this shining face that Moshe Rabbeinu had, then everybody would be able to say, the second set of tablets were never given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They wouldn't believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had given them to Moshe Rabbeinu. So as if you like, it was some sort of receipt that he came away with, a petek to the barcode had been scanned, and the stripes on his talus, and he was able to say, this was, you know, the first set of luchot, everybody knew exactly where they came from. Second set, Moshe Rabbeinu had broken the first set, disappears up Har Sinai, comes back, oh well, I managed to get another pair for you, you know, that's you know, did he get them from some dodgy, you know, corner shop off eBay at a reduced price, or are these the real thing? And this is the it's that, you know, the Karnei Hahod is that Microsoft sticker on the back of the computer that tells you that this is the real product, and that was the purpose of the Karnei Hahod, to show, to endorse Moshe Rabbeinu's shlichut. This can also be expanded a little bit to perhaps suggest that it was maybe even a sign of forgiveness from HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well, that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't coming back with the second set of luchot with his head bowed, but he was coming back triumphantly. Yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu still loves us, he's given us the second set of luchot. So that's one explanation in Chizkuni. The Chizkuni's second explanation is Davar Acher, what had happened, what was the whole reason they needed the second set of luchot, was because HaKadosh Baruch, because the Bnei Israel had wanted to replace Moshe, believing that he was dead, with another leader. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them that Moshe Rabbeinu really reflects the brightness, the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ein Lahamid Achebim Komo. Even if Moshe Rabbeinu had died, they couldn't have simply replaced him with somebody else. So, you know, to show them that, at least at this juncture, Moshe Rabbeinu is irreplaceable, and to show, if you like, the heresy of what they tried to do previously when they appointed, when they built the Egel Hazav. I'm sure, call me a bit. So far we have three interpretations or explanations as to why Moshe Rabbeinu's face shone. Rashi, a reflection of the close encounter he had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chizkuni number one, to validate or to authenticate the second set of luchot. And Chizkuni number two is to validate and endorse Moshe Rabbeinu's supremacy. Let's now look at the Malbim, Malbim has a very interesting interpretation. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu come down with these karnei ha'hod, with these shining face, this shining face, after with the second set of lukot and not with the first set? Sha'az ha'yitza kol ha'torah k'tuba min Hashem yitbarach ba'atzmo. Take one, the first set of lukot, Kadosh Baruch Hu wrote the, engraved the, after the lukot with the words of the Torah. Lo ki ata, but this time it was different. Shenichtava al-yidei Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote what was on the lukot. And it's actually a machloket in the Mefarshim, some machloket, but certainly whether Moshe Rabbeinu actually inscribed the lukot the second time, as some Mefarshim say, or HaKadosh Baruch Hu inscribed them, then there's certainly psol lecha, Moshe Rabbeinu carved them out, whereas we've got no indication that Moshe Rabbeinu carved out the first set of lukot. Hofia alav or yeter gadol uvnitaleh, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu had a much more shining countenance than he did have previously. As we know, even the angels were astonished and frightened, awed by Moshe Rabbeinu's appearance. K'moshe katuv b'midrash, as the Midrash says on the pasuk of Malachei Tzvaot Yidodun Yidodun, that the Malachim, they sort of jumped back in terror when they saw the splendor of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'gam shezeh haya ot umofet livnei shoshe Torah 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 Torah. Okay, fine, that's what essentially the Kuni is saying. But what the Malbim is saying is that with the second set of Lukot, Moshe Rabbeinu was a much greater partner in their creation than he was with the first set of Lukot. First set of Lukot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu simply get, Moshe Rabbeinu was simply a recipient. In the second set of Lukot, Moshe Rabbeinu was a partner in giving them. And if we can diverge a little bit, the Tziv has a whole mahalach on this, which I think we might have touched on six months ago when we looked at I think Parshat Ekev, or maybe Vayet Chanan. But one of the Tziv asks repeatedly, what's the difference between the first set of Lukot and the second set of Lukot? And essentially says the first set of Lukot, the Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu was very different to the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu got the second time round. What was the difference? First time, everything was given to him on a plate. All the halachot were shown to him. All the ways of learning out the svarot to use, the svarot that could be used, etc., were all given to Moshe Rabbeinu. But there was no what he calls kach of chidush. There was no opportunity for people to be original, for people to be novel, for people to create new ideas from the way the Torah was communicated the first time round. The way the Torah was communicated the second time round, it was given with the power of Chiddush. Now's not the time to discuss why the Egel in between should have effected that change. That's a change that the Tziv says happened. That the first set was, on the one hand, more sacred than the second set, because it came directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the people, the Talmidei Chachamim, were less engaged with it than they were with the first set. And that perhaps, you know, is because, you know, perhaps if you make people greater partners in it, then they're less likely to profane it, as happens with the Egel HaZahav. But the point is, they had a greater partnership with it. That was the nature of the second set of Lukot, as evidenced by the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in forming them and fashioning them. So therefore, because he was much more involved, he wasn't just a recipient, but he was a partner in giving that Torah. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, his face shone as as evidence of his involvement in the creation of that Torah.
That's interesting, because it kind of goes against the Chizkuni thing that it's a rubber stamp, perhaps, and that you could say that.
Well, personally, it might well go against the Chizkuni, and there's no problem with that whatsoever. I don't think it necessarily has to be, and says that the same principle can be there, that, you know, people, you know, both things can go hand in hand.
So you're saying that the Malbim is saying that the face shone so that the people would know?
No, but simply as evidence, but almost similar to Rashi, in the sense that he's had a particular experience. Rashi said it was contact with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's creation of the Torah. Mm-hmm. The point is, because he's become almost godly in a certain way by being involved that way in the creation of Torah. Now the Or HaChaim, which I think we won't go through inside, but the Or HaChaim has what I would say almost a similar notion. Well, you know what, let's look at least the first part inside. The Midrash Rabbi Yehuda bar Nachman Amar, Kishikatav Moshe HaTorah. So Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah. So again, reflecting this idea of involvement, that's the similarity between the Malbim and the Or HaChaim. Nishtayeb Kulmus Kima. So the Midrash tells us a little bit of ink was left over on the quill. Yeah, just a drop of ink. V'hiroa al Rosho, and Moshe Rabbeinu wiped his forehead with the kulmus, with the quill. And that's how he got this shining face. Now the question is, what's one got to do with the other? And the Or HaChaim says, what was this little bit of ink that was left over on the kulmus? Where did it come from? No. V'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to write out that Moshe Rabbeinu was very humble and very modest, Anav is usually spelt Ayin Nun Yud Vav. Moshe Rabbeinu was indeed very humble, and so he even missed out the Yud in that word Anav Ma'od. He just wrote it Ayin Nun Vav, and he was left with a tiny bit of ink. And that was what got splattered on his forehead. That was the spare bit of ink that was hanging around. And as a result, the reward for anava, the reward for humility and modesty, is the karnei hahod. It's the fact that you have this bright, shining countenance. That's, of course, what we'd call so paradoxical, in the sense that a very modest, humble person want to hide everything. But that's the nature of Moshe Rabbeinu and his anava, that such was it, that as a result for being so modest, he shone. And of course, a factor of his modesty was that he then covered up that shining.
You can link it to the tziv, I think. So the ink that's left over is perhaps the Parag Chiddush, because there's still some ink left for us to write.
Maybe. I mean, I don't see why you need to link it to the Nativ. Maybe. I don't know if they're, arguing or not arguing. I mean, you're saying how does this Medrash fit in with the Nativ, yeah. Really, not the Archive. So there's something left over for us to use. Abar Benel makes the observation that Moshe Rabbeinu had been on the mountain by this stage for 120 days. On each occasion he'd neither eaten nor drunk. So he presumably had the troubles and should have looked fairly emaciated, withered, and less than radiant and healthy. Nevertheless, he managed to survive quite well. And if we look halfway down in that Abar Benel, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu engineered things that he shouldn't look ill and emaciated, but on the contrary, that he should have this bright shining skin, not like just like everybody else, but he should be as bright as all these shining stars in the heavens. All this was so that everybody would know and see. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu had done. Shelo ala lechem levado yichye adam, that the person doesn't survive just by eating bread and regular provisions. V'shein ma'atzor b'yad Hashem, and there's nothing stopping Hashem mibrochad Hashab ba'aretz from making new wonderful things in the world. U'me'asot adam chumro domeh b'zohar gishmo lishmer shalayim, and from turning a person's physically to being almost heavenly. So now Barbara is saying this is was aided on, you know, the tremendous experience that Moshe Rabbeinu had undergone, even though he'd been out of contact with anything worldly for 4 months. Nevertheless, he thrived in that environment. And if we develop this theme further, you know, the notion of lo al lechem levado yichya adam, that's the person doesn't survive only by bread, emphasizing for the trust that a person can flourish if he's got spiritual nutrition, even if he hasn't got physical nutrition. Just I'm not sure, are the doors banging or something? Which is of course an interesting notion, and whether we should take this in a regular literal sense to say that listen, you can go 120 days without eating or drinking, and if you feel really close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you'll look as bright and healthy at the end as you did at the beginning. I don't know, but you know, so the implications there, maybe this was just in times of close hashkacha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's like that, I don't know. But certainly that seems to be what the Abar Benel is saying. So I think we've suggested a number of answers to our first question, which was, why was Moshe Rabbeinu's face shining? Different answers, not necessarily complementary to one another, but a range of answers there. Now, our second question was, how come Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that? Why is that a problem for us? Would we expect Moshe Rabbeinu to be aware of it?
Elicit the cave,
presumably.
He must have wondered where the source of light was.
So the Mepharshim addressed that, and they say, no, that didn't bother, because while he was on Har Sinai, it was very bright all the time. So, you know, that was he was used to that bright light. That came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Well, it really depends. I mean, if you think about spinning, then it doesn't really matter that he didn't know, because essentially it's nothing to do with him. It's purely a sign.
So then why is it telling us that he didn't know? You might well be right that it didn't matter. If it didn't matter, then there's no need for the Torah to tell us that he didn't know.
But sure, it's more of a shiloh in the case of Rashi and in case of the others who seem to suggest that it's something to do with his experience. And so for his experience, kind of, if you open his experience, kind of like, it's more about the relation of the people. And it's, according to the other confession, it seems to be that the suggestion is this is the representation of some transformation he's gone through. Maybe it's an even bigger question as to why he wasn't aware that he'd been transformed in some way.
Okay.
If he knows, I mean, he kind of goes onto God's team, if you know. He becomes another. He becomes a too superior figure, I think, or I feel, towards Israel. Whereas if he doesn't know, then he's still an intermediary. He's still kind of human and humble and can be mistaken and so on, and can still be used as God's shaliach, as you said. I wouldn't like to see him sort of knowing everything.
Well, the question is to what degree, certainly after his experiences on Har Sinai, did Moshe Rabbeinu become almost supernatural? I mean, the Gemara says on the pasuk by Achsarehu Ma'at Melokim Melohim that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made Moshe Rabbeinu a little bit less than the angels. So, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu was almost, if not supernatural, at least superhuman. We know that after his experiences on Har Sinai, he no longer was intimate with his wife. Partly because he could be called on to speak with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at any stage, but nevertheless it shows a certain otherworldliness about him. So So let's look at the Malbim. The Malbim's comments are repeated by the Netziv and the Orach Chaim as well. What's the reason for telling us, how was it that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that he was glowing in this way? Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, was carrying the two tablets. And he assumed that the bright light that was shining, as it was coming out of the tablets that he was carrying, and he didn't realize that it was coming from him. Remember, we said Moshe Rabbeinu was immensely modest, immensely humble, and therefore part of it is, if there's something else, and if he can assume the source is elsewhere, it wouldn't even have occurred to him that it was coming from him. That's what the Malbim is saying. He was carrying the Shnei Luchot. He wasn't sort of carrying it in a carrier bag, or in a rucksack on his back. He had to lift it up high. Any radiance that was coming, that was shining from, presumably he could see radiance. Didn't occur to him the radiance was from him. The radiance, and even if he thought the radiance was from him, he would have assumed that the radiance was from him because he was holding on to these Luchot. Once he lets go of the Luchot, that he wouldn't, there would be no such radiance.
Can I just ask you about the particular pasuk that is saying that he didn't know that his face was sending forth these beams? When it says "b'davoi tov," does it mean at that particular time? At that point, he didn't know, but later on, he did know.
That's again one of the ambiguities of this pasuk. It's addressed by the Mefarshim, and I forget exactly how they addressed it though. It doesn't, I don't think, make a big difference to these specific questions, but it is addressed by the Mefarshim. It is a relevant question. So now we're left with the question of what was the purpose of the veil and how was the veil being used. And most of the Mefarshim understand that the veil was used when Moshe Rabbeinu was not communicating either with HaKadosh Baruch Hu or with the people. If we look at the Psukim, we see in verse Lamed, Moshe Rabbeinu came down. All the people saw him, that his face was shining. They were afraid of approaching him, so they saw that it was shining. Moshe Rabbeinu called to them, "Don't worry." That's Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Pasuk Lamed Bet, they came close to him, and Vaitzaveim Eit Kol Hashem Diber Adonai Tov B'Har Sinai, communicated to them everything that Hashem had told him. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Moshe Rabbeinu finished speaking to them, then he put on the veil. Pasuk Lamed Dalet, when he went to speak with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yasir Et HaMasveh, he removed the veil. Ad Seitor, till he left, and then he went and spoke to Bnei Israel, and all of Bnei Israel, Pasuk Lamed Hei, saw that he was shining. Vayishiv Moshe Et HaMasveh Panav, and then Moshe Rabbeinu put the veil back on his face, and put on the Daberi Tor, until he came to speak with HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the next occasion. That is the way that most Mefarshim understand it. Not all of the Mefarshim, but most of them. So now let's see what the Mefarshim have to say about the significance of the veil. So Rashi says, "Lichvod Karnei Ha'od." The reason why he covered it was out of respect for the fact that he was shining, which was we remember Rashi's Shita is, what is this glow? It's a reflection of the divine radiance. So it should be concealed, Shelo Yazunu Hakol Mehem, so that you shouldn't have everybody gazing at it the whole time. No Hayano Tein HaMasveh Kenegdan, so he would place the veil in front of them. And he would remove it when he would speak with Israel, and when HaKadosh Baruch Hu was speaking with him, I'd say to until he left HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, when he left HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, he would go without the masveh and put it on after he finished communicating with Bnei Yisrael. So Rashi says essentially this is a manifestation of God's glory, and it wasn't appropriate that it should be visible at all times. If so, why was it important that it was uncovered when Moshe Rabbeinu was communicating with HaKadosh Baruch Hu or with the people? So the Chizkuni quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya, "V'hayu einecha ra'ot et morecha," that your eyes should always see your teacher or the source of your respect. And so therefore when Moshe Rabbeinu interacted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he had to have face-to-face contact. When he interacted with the people, he also had to have face-to-face contact, because in that instance he was the teacher. Now, so Chizkuni and Rashi, I don't think, are particularly arguing there, that it's something which had to be concealed from the people in general. But if you look in the last line in the Chizkuni, he adds a further dimension. Remember, Rashi said it was lichvod karnei hahod. The Chizkuni says slightly differently. Kedeshe lo yiru tamid kiddush kirun panav. So they shouldn't always see the glory, the shining face of Moshe Rabbeinu. V'yed omer lahem shehu chol. Then they would come to be too familiar with him. Who I am is Ivshkina, but this was radiance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, I mean, possibly, actually just rereading it now, maybe the Chizkuni is saying the same as Rashi. They think nothing of the glow, and really this glow is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or maybe they think nothing of Moshe Rabbeinu. They'd be too familiar with Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps is supposed to be have a certain mystique about him. It's like, sort of, you know, with the royal family, you know, once they went on, you know, the it's a knockout, you know, that was the end of it all. That's you want to have a certain mystique about them and not have that constant interaction. So actually rereading it through now, I'm not 100% sure what the Chizkuni had in mind. The Netziv is perhaps going to bother Ben Voss, but that's fair enough. That's no reason why at least something in the Shir shouldn't. It's all about being challenged. So let's look at the Netziv. V'inyan ha-masveh shenatan al-panav, the reason why he put the veil over his face, v'lo ratza shiyu mistaklim al-panav tamid, he didn't want them always to be looking at him. Who Gadesha Ye Yuchal Yot Daveik Bamakshapto Be'elakut. It said that he could be constantly focused on thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'loit Bal Belay Dekach. And he wouldn't be distracted and bothered by anything else. Ukfabian Lelsof Parshapo Mikrabi Yeshaya. And the Netziv says he's explained elsewhere, a pasuk from Yeshaya, Shamit Nahik, because you shout Veikut, a person who has great Kedusha, great sanctity, and cleaves absolutely to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, said, I'm called Yot Nichnaf Be'ohalo. Such a person remains secluded in their tents. Omnam Rabbah Kochosha Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu was even more exceptional than that. Asher Tekef Achat Hamudor V'Esek Ravim Bnei Adam, immediately after he'd learned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and dealt with everybody's problems, Heisirat Dibrat Bnei Adam, he was able to immediately cut off what everybody had been talking to him about, the San Masvel Panav, and put a mask or a veil over his face. And immediately he could isolate himself to be entirely focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is quite radical. What we're saying is the veil almost was nothing to do with the fact that his face was shining. The veil was a way of cutting out everybody else. It was a burqa, essentially, and the purpose of that burqa, we won't debate the purpose of other burqas, but the purpose of that burqa was in actual fact to create a barrier between him and the people, that he shouldn't have to interact with them, and that he shouldn't be bothered by them, shouldn't be disturbed by them, except when he wanted to be. He didn't want to be totally and continually accessible to them, because as a Navi who had to have that close relationship with Hashem, it would jar, it would spoil that relationship if he was in constant interaction with everybody else. I don't know if anybody wants to respond to that.
A bit monkish.
Yes?
So, I don't understand that people would... He would be in his tent, and he would be... You know, if people would know that if there was a light shining out, that he would, you know, be accessible to questions.
No, no, I don't think that's... I don't think that's... No, he's saying that Moshe Rabbeinu...
with the light on.
There were certain times when he was available to the people, and certain other times when he wasn't. And when he wasn't available, he wanted to retreat into himself. The way he did that was by putting up a physical barrier, the Netziv says, between himself and the people.
That's not so anti-boss, because it's not that he's holding himself as superior or ability, it's just that he's got a job to do and he can't be constantly distracted by it.
Yeah, we can make Ben Ross feel, you know, less bothered. I'm sure we can get him to leave the room at the end of the shiur moderately comfortable. Ben Friedman was going to make an observation.
Surely the also applies that if he's putting on the veil when he wants to cut himself off from the people, he wants to sort of cut himself off from God for a little while? Not cut himself, obviously. I mean, because, you know, because when he puts on the veil, he's not talking to either God or to the people, he's just not talking to God. So, because he's like saying, this is my time. I mean, not necessarily my time to, if it's just his time to consider the message, as it were.
I assume that's the time when he was contemplating on accomplished
part. No, of course.
I don't think that was when he was, you know, watching films on his iPod.
No, 100%. Even if that's the case, it is a extension, logical extension of the Nitziv, that he's also separating himself away in order that he,
The Nitziv more or less says the opposite of that. The Nitziv more or less says, you know, this was so that he could, you know, contemplate on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I don't think he was trying to, you know, cut himself off from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
It's not an unusual sort of almost like model of leadership, saying that leaders, as we know, are cut off from the people half the time, most of the time, whatever it is, and they do their bit out with the people, and then they have people to protect them from that.
So bothering Ben Voss, in the I think, if I can put words into your mouth. But, you know, this question, you know, what type of leader should Moshe Rabbeinu be? Leader in an ivory tower? Now, or do we want to believe that as a Torah leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, constantly available to everybody, not no different to, you know, the notion that you can only get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, by separating yourself from society, I think it's probably what bothers Ben most. I mean, you're right though. I mean, this is not an uncommon model of leadership, that you consolidate your power by being inaccessible and untouchable. The question is that how we want to regard Moshe Rabbeinu or not?
I wasn't necessarily saying it's like a way of consolidating power, but more practically a way of getting things done.
Well, that was what Yitro told him, you know, a few weeks ago. You know, if you've got everybody, you know, phoning you with all the daft shiners, you know, morning, noon and night, you know, you're
never
going to... Well, I was going to say, you know, you have rabbis to do that, and, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu can take care of the serious stuff.
So why did he need this veil then? I mean, if you'd already got Yitro's solution.
No, because I think we're overlapping different things. I think what certainly what the Nitziv says is he just needed not to cut everything out. You know, it's like the people aren't bothering him. He didn't want to see the people. He didn't want to, he wanted to feel secluded. The notion of people interfered with his spirituality.
I think the experience of Moses with Yitro makes me think that he wasn't that sort of man, and I'm uncomfortable with it. Also, allegorically, the half did a million times, but it's the difference between the medieval priest standing behind his root screen, babbling away in Latin, which no one else understands, and the later post-Reformation vicar standing at his pulpit reading a Bible in the native language. Which is a shaliach position. It's not a.
I'm very grateful to you for those modes of illumination, which I wouldn't have thought of. I don't understand exactly what you're saying. Except, of course, that Moshe Rabbeinu did communicate directly with the people. He did. He took off the veil when he spoke to them.
Yeah, which is why I can't agree with that.
I mean, that's sort of like we see that throughout with Moshe and Aaron, like. And from the very beginning, Moshe doesn't want to get involved, doesn't want to be involved in this whole process, doesn't want to switch a pyro, doesn't want to. He's very happy to have to have the burning bush experience, but he doesn't really want to. I mean, that's why God sent Aaron. The Aaron is why it's Ahosha and Rosha. Like, very much Moshe is seen as one who's slightly uncomfortable in a public role. I mean, whenever the people come to him, his first instinct is not to address the problem, but is to go and speak to people. What do you want to say about it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu, as a personality, didn't like to play the crowds. So how much of it, is a reflection of Moshe's personality? How much is essential? I don't know. But okay, let's park them and sit there for the time being. But I think that's highly interesting. Let's finish with the Abarbanel, who says, why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to put on the veil? So that he shouldn't be, when he sits down to eat his cornflakes in the morning, his man that tastes of cornflakes, and say in the morning, he shouldn't have to look for a worm in it by using the zivashchina that was shining out of him. That shouldn't be illuminating choldiker activities. The gambeit diburul ishtov anshe beito bidvarim she'ena me'atorah v'mitzvot. And when he's just sitting, talking over the events of the day with Tzipora and the boys, so also, it shouldn't have that bright light shining. So clearly, what the Abarbanel is saying is that the masveh was there because the brightness of Torah, it was, or not Torah, the brightness of the Shechina is not suitable for every situation, and that's why he covered it. It was appropriate for matters of Torah, not appropriate for matters of Chol. I particularly found this Abarbanel interesting because he used to sit down and chat with his wife and his sons about things that weren't only Torah. Now, at least according to Abarbanel, Moshe Rabbeinu used to talk about other things with them as well. Don't know what. That's the Ramses Rangers versus the Pitton Panthers. Who won?
But he did talk to them with a veil on.
but assuming that's actually a pro Ben, this is the Abarbanel that was the Ben, which is that then the veil becomes not something that keeps him separate from people, something that allows him to interact with the people in a way that's not
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't. Much as we all like Ben and we all want to, I don't think we need to fit everything in to satisfy.
I quite like that trend.
Ben's requirements there. In the sense that, no, I don't think he's really saying that. So it's just saying that, Moshe Rabbeinu did interact, did do whole things, and for those whole things it wasn't appropriate to have the light shining. Whether, how much he wanted to interact with the people, it doesn't say anything at all. Nevertheless, what it's saying is that the condition of the Abarbanel, was that the veil was there to cut off that light of the Shekhinah in some sense. So we'll leave it there. But hopefully, one thing about these few pesukim is, of course, Kitisa is one of these long sidrot. So you often, even if you do plough through the Seder every week, you sometimes don't get time to give, you know, Maftir of Kitisa the attention that it deserves. So hopefully we've discovered a bit more about it. I'll catch you next week.